Tonight, I'm going to tell you the story of Mr. Nate Saint, who is a jungle pilot. If you had lived in the jungles of Ecuador, the jungles that looked maybe something like this, but with a little bit of rain, a lot more sunlight, a lot more temperature, it'd be hot, you'd be sweating, it'd be terrible, you'd all want water, and there would be bugs big enough to kill you. That would be the jungles of Ecuador. And inside those jungles, a long time ago, and even today, there lives a tribe called the Badani tribe. The Badani tribe were known by people outside of the tribe as the Aucas. And that was a term that meant savage or naked. They were the naked savages. And they were deadly. Because they would make spears that were long and very sharp, and they were known for running raids on fellow people, and they would kill other tribes to take over their power and over their families, over their kids. If you had been born into a Wadani tribe, you would go to bed every night afraid that just perhaps that night another tribe would raid your village and kill you and your parents or maybe take you away. If you were one of the Wadani kids, you probably would not know your grandparents because your grandparents wouldn't have lived long enough for you to know them. If you had been in a Wadani tribe, you wouldn't have known anything about refrigerators, about microwaves, about cameras, about telephones, about anything like that, and especially not about airplanes. And so, when in 1955 you started to hear the sound of what sounded like a jungle bee buzzing off in the distance and coming closer and closer and then so loud that you knew it wasn't one of the bees that you had been so familiar with, and then it got louder and louder until it was roaring and buzzed a big yellow airplane right over your village, you would have been terrified and scared. It wouldn't have been something you would have run outside like we do and look at the airplane in the sky. It would have been something you were terrified of. And that's exactly what happened for a village of Wadani people when Nate Saint flew his airplane over their village. From the time he was a young boy, he loved airplanes. He was born in 1923. That's almost 100 years ago now. And he was born in a family very similar to many of yours. He was one of eight. He was the seventh in line. But unlike your families, do you know what his dad did for him? And I'm pretty sure none of your dads have done this. Their dad built them a roller coaster in their backyard. So dads, if you want your kids to grow up and be good missionaries, I think there's a causal connection between a roller coaster in the backyard and missionaries. So keep that in mind, kids. Remind your dads of that later. Nate Saint, when he was 7 years old, only seven, he had his first airplane ride. And he got in an airplane and he could barely see up over the cockpit, but he loved it. His older brother was a pilot and took him up. Later, when he was 10 years old, he went up again, and this time he was able to sit next to his brother in a different type of plane, and he was able to even fly the plane himself as a 10-year-old boy. Can you imagine that? As a 10-year-old flying an airplane by yourself, well, not totally, but with your older brother, he was able to take that plane ride, and from then he knew that he was going to be a pilot. But what's most important in his life happened when he was 13. And that was when, at a church service, he decided to give his life to Jesus, to confess his sins, to throw himself upon the mercy of God and let God save him. And from that time on, even though he wanted to be an airplane pilot, he wanted more than anything to follow Jesus. But for him, following Jesus looked like going after airplanes. And so he grew up, he became an airplane mechanic at LaGuardia Airport in New York and was working there. His brother had got him a job, and then he joined the Army Air Corps. He wanted to be a pilot in the Army, and he was going to fly in World War II and get free pilot training, and everything was going good, and he was in the training program. And just as he was about to finally start flying, an old injury from when he was a kid, a bone infection, started to flare up again, causing him to be ineligible to continue his flying. So he had wanted so badly, ever since he was 7 years old, to fly in an airplane. But now, because of an injury in his knee, the Army said, "You can't fly." And so he was somewhat sad and depressed and didn't know what to do. And he knew that God had a plan, but he thought that plan was flying. And now he couldn't fly. And he didn't know what God wanted him to do. And he started praying and asking God to help and direct him. And God, in a New Year's Eve service, gave him that direction. And that direction was that he was supposed to be a missionary. Now, he knew that God hadn't given him the desire to preach. But God, what his desire was, that he would be one of those people who would take the gospel to those people who have never heard of Jesus at all. The opportunity came for him to go to college. He went to college a little bit and continued practicing mechanics work at an airline. And then he even got his private pilot's license. And then an organization asked for his help down in Mexico. They had an airplane that had flown into a building and crashed onto a runway, and they wanted that airplane fixed up so that they could get it back. And so they sent him down to Mexico, and he lived in Mexico for 6 months working on this airplane. And he didn't have the right tools, and he didn't have the right parts, and he didn't have the right equipment. And he lived in a small little room, and it was really hot and really stinky, and there were bats and bad food and all sorts of crazy stuff that he had to deal with. But it taught him what it means to be tough on the mission field, and it connected him with the people who had given him a job. So he went back to America, and he married his wife, Marge. And then the Missionary Aviation Fellowship sent him and his wife down to Ecuador, not too far away from the Alca tribe, the Wadani people. And so they worked as a missionary pilot. That means that he took a little airplane, a little yellow airplane that he'd had, and he'd fly around to different villages and land and pick up medicine and take medicine to the people who needed it. And then he would pick up doctors and take them to where there were emergencies. And he helped out in any way that he could with his plane to make travel safer and easier for the missionaries that were down there. And while he was there, he made several good friends who helped him in the missionary work. In September of 1955, they were flying close to their village, not too far away from where their base was, and they found the Aka tribe for the first time. No one knew where the Akas lived. They only had heard of attacks, and their oil equipment had been attacked and ravaged before. But they finally, from the airplane, were able to see a small village. One of the things that Nate had done that was really cool is that he had figured out a way to use an airplane to drop stuff by bucket. So what he would do is he let out a canvas bucket out of the back of the plane with a rope tied to it. And so it would drag behind the plane, and Nate would turn the plane into a tight bank, and it would spin around and around. And eventually, as he kept going around, that bucket, instead of swinging around really fast, it would slow down and all of a sudden be an upside-down cone with the airplane at the top and the bucket sitting on the ground still as if it wasn't even tied to an airplane. And so they would take stuff and put in it and drop medicine, supplies, things like that. But they decided they were going to make contact with the Akas this way. So they flew the airplane in, and they dropped the bucket, and they dropped their first thing with some pots and pans and I think some salts. And they put them in this canvas bucket and dropped it down there for these Indians. And none of the Indians came out. But then as they kept coming, the Akas started coming out, and they would open up the bucket and they would take the gifts out. Eventually, the Indians even were so happy that they started putting stuff back in there. And so they put in a headdress from the tribe, and they put in some other fruits from the jungle. And then one time they got back to the airfield, and Nate and his friends went to the bucket, and it was moving. And they wondered, oh my goodness, what is this? They were afraid it might be a snake, so they got a big stick and they looked, but it was just a parrot. And that became Nate's son's pet for a long time. And so they had this great relationship that they were building by the airplane with these people. Jim Elliott, one of his friends, started learning the language from Rachel, who was Nate's sister, who had become friends with a little girl named Dayuma, who had left the Akan tribe when she was just a teenager, trying to escape from the village. Yes, question. Jim Elliott is going to factor into our story in a big way here in just a minute. Jim was working with Rachel trying to learn the language. So he was learning the language. They were planning and preparing, and everything was going so well. They decided it was time for them to land on the beach and try to make in-person contact with these missionaries. And so they flew the plane and on a rough and rugged sandy beach landed the plane and established their beachhead. Nate took one missionary. He took Jim Elliott in there, and then he went and got another one named Ed, and then another one named Peter, and another one named Roger, and they all set up a little camp right there on the beach, hoping that these Alka Indians, these Wadani people, would come and meet them. And sure enough, they did. And the first time that anyone outside had ever made friendly contact with the Alka Indians was on this beach. there was one man and two women who came out to see them. And they didn't speak enough Aachen to be able to know know these people's names, so they nicknamed the man George. And George was really interested in the airplane. He even got in the airplane, and they took him up and took him on a big ride over his village so that he could see his village from up above. And George was having a blast, and these Aachen were having a blast. And, of course, the missionaries were so excited because they were actually making friends with these people that they had been looking for so long. So Nate, every night, would fly the plane back to the airport because they didn't want to leave the plane on the river in case the river rose and washed the plane away. And so Nate was leaving one Sunday morning, January 8th, 1956. He was leaving, and he told his wife and the friends at the mission, he said, "Hey, pray, because I think today is the day we're going to make contact with the village." And he took off, and he said, "I'll call you at 4:30 over the radio." And he took off, and he left them, and they were there at the radio waiting to hear what happened at 4:30. And it was just silent. They waited a couple more hours, and it was still silent. They waited till the next morning, and then they were very scared. What they didn't know was that when George and the two ladies had left, the two ladies had gotten separated from George and made it back to the village by themselves. Those two ladies were not supposed to be alone. George was supposed to be with them, taking care of them. And so when George got back to the village, the men said, "Why did you let the ladies go by themselves?" And he didn't want to get in trouble. He didn't want to get speared himself. And so he said, I didn't leave that. We were attacked by the people with the airplane. And they attacked us and I got separated." And the women tried to say, "No, that's not true." But the men believed George. And they said, "We're going to take spears and go kill those men for attacking you." And they picked up their spears and they left, and they met all five of those missionaries on that beach, and they killed all five of them with their spears. And it would seem like the mission that Nate was on to take the gospel, to take the good news of Jesus to these people, was done. Because now he and his missionary friends were dead. But the good thing about mission work and about the work of God taking the gospel to other people is that it doesn't always stop when people die. Sometimes God uses people's death to push it forward. And in fact, in just a little over a year, two of the ladies from that village left the village to come and find Dayuma, the lady who had taught Jim some Aachen phrases. And Dayuma went back to the village, and then she came back and asked Jim Elliott's wife, Betty, and her daughter, Valerie, and Nate Saint's sister, Rachel, to come back into the village and live with the Aka people. And they did. So within 2 years' time, Nate's sister and one of the other missionaries' wife and daughter were sitting around a fire, eating food with the very people who had killed their husbands. And within a few years, many of the Wadani people came to follow Jesus, the son of the person they called Wagangi, which is in their language means the man maker, the one who makes man. And they were able to tell them about Wagangi and his son, the son who took a spear himself so that they could live. And it was because of the example of a person like Nate Saint and his work with an airplane that those people were able to hear the good news of Jesus. And that is the missionary story of Nate Saint, the jungle pilot.